Before presenting our Founders Day speaker, I would like the privilege of presenting some special guests of the seminary and of the School of Church Music. We feel particularly fortunate in having these people with us today. First of all, I would like to present Mrs. Donald Winters, the wife of our speaker, who was very instrumental in the beginning of the school, as she was the original planner for the curriculum and many of the programs, and actually was instrumental in guiding the first year of the school while her husband was in the Army. This was back in 1943-44. With 1944, we had our first entering class. She was also, as you can note, one of the original faculty members of our School of Church Music, and we're very happy to have Mrs. Winters here today as she, with us, hear her husband speak on this particular topic of the founding of our School of Church Music. Then, particularly again, what a privilege to have Mrs. Ellis Fuller, senior, with us today with her family. Mrs. Fuller, the wife of the founder of our School of Church Music, Dr. Ellis Fuller, Sr., is here today with her children. She has two daughters and one son, and I'd like them to also be recognized because, in a sense, they benefited from the ministry of Dr. Donald Winters, our speaker, when he was Minister of Music at First Baptist Church, Atlanta, Georgia. First of all, Ida Lee Fuller Waddle and her husband, Terry. Then Sarah Elizabeth Fuller Miller and her husband, Jim. And Dr. Ellis Fuller Jr. and his wife, Dorothy. And we're so happy they could be here with a number of Mrs. Fuller's grandchildren. This is a particularly historic occasion for us as we have this group with us today to hear Dr. Winters. I'd also like to recognize a special friend of the seminary and the music school in Mrs. V.V. Cook Sr. Mrs. Cook, the wife of one of our major benefactors for the seminary, and is remembered particularly in the music school as the original home of the School of Church Music, which is now President McCall's home, was given to the seminary by Mr. V.V. Cook and Mrs. Cook. We have carried the name of Cook Hall into the building behind us, which is the most recent building in building program of Southern Seminary and appropriately named Cook Hall. And then too, we're glad to have a trustee, Mrs. Richard Hill, who has for now a number of years been on the Board of Trustees Music Subcommittee, but has for as long as I have been here and longer with her husband, Mr. Geens, have been instrumental in the life of this seminary through gifts, and I might say through leadership roles in guiding us in the history of the seminary and of, as well, our School of Church Music. We're glad to have all of you. We just wish you could be here more often for occasions like this. And now to our speaker for the day, a personal friend of the music faculty, and we feel a very much a kinship to him, Dr. Donald Winters, who is Dean of the School of Music at William Carey College in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Dr. Winters is a native of Ohio. I recognize that that is a tremendous handicap to overcome, as I was raised and born in Northern Illinois, which means that we loved Southerners so well that we just decided to hang around a long time. You got a little further south than I did, Dr. Winters, being in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. But Dr. Winters is a graduate of Westminster Choir School, which has been a leader in the field of church music for many, many years, holding the Bachelor of Music and the Master of Music degree from that school. In addition, he's done graduate studies at Indiana University, Columbia University, and at Northwestern University. He was honored by Blue Mountain College with the degree Doctor of Music. Dr. Winters is a skilled conductor, a fine organist, an administrator, and an excellent church musician. We feel particularly that his greatest role for us was being as the key administrator in the early years of this School of Church Music of ours. He is a particularly gifted man in spiritual communication. Anyone that knows him knows that this is a gift of God, which he exercises with humility and with skill. He is also a very skilled musician. And these two qualities have particularly made him endeared to church musicians all over the South and Southwest in particular. And it is with distinct pleasure today that I present our speaker, our Founders Day speaker for this day, Dr. Donald Winters. Don, we're awfully happy to have you here.
Thank you, Dr. Herron, for your gracious words of introduction. Dr. Hull, members of the seminary faculty and student body and friends, it is indeed a pleasure for Mrs. Winters and me to visit the seminary for this occasion. It is good to see and to talk with many of our Louisville friends. We appreciate very much every kindness that has been extended to us at this time. The launching of the School of Church Music of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, as recalled by Donald and Francis Winters. As early as 1928, Dr. Ellis Adams Fuller had a dream, or as a graduate of the School of Prophets, a vision, if you will. As pastor, as Southwide Secretary of Evangelism, as a person, he again and again had been aware of the power of music in the service of religion. Yet there was almost no leadership training in the Southern Baptist Convention for one who could come to a local church as a permanent, full-time staff member to carry on a music program for all age groups in the church. For years, Dr. Fuller sought for and even tried himself to inculcate in the musicians serving his church a viewpoint of church music which would enable them to project and carry out a dynamic teaching ministry of music that would parallel the teaching ministries afforded Baptist churches in Sunday school and church training. This church viewpoint for the music leadership and total program of the local church he pastored became almost a magnificent obsession as, through more than a decade, he continued to try to bring it to realization. In the early 1920s, also another man, John Finley Williamson, had a vision. He was a musician serving a Church of the Brethren congregation in Dayton, Ohio. His dream was to restore praise to the members of the local congregation after the manner of the biblical exhortations for all the people to praise God with understanding. To this end, he reasoned that choirs for all ages drawn from members of the congregation itself would be the most satisfactory way to bring this about if they were to receive from a church-minded musician both individual and group instruction of a quality that would produce for Almighty God at his church the best singing that could be found anywhere. He believed that well-trained choirs would in turn encourage good congregational response and lead the congregation in both singing and attitudes of worship. So Dr. Williamson, being a creative musician who loved the Lord and loved people, developed choirs for all age groups closely graded according to musical abilities, gave private voice lessons to choir members, and developed an adult choir of such superb quality that it was not long until other churches began to seek his singers to train their own congregations. The Westminster Presbyterian Church of Dayton persuaded him to build such a program in that church, and this was the program which eventually grew into a choir school because of popular demand for the church-wide plan of music instruction and ministry he had developed there. Thus, two men, one a pastor, one a musician, were reaching out during the same decade of the 20s for the same goals, to bring about maximum participation of all age groups in a worship in which music might be used as one tool to bring life to that experience. In 1940, by way of an article based on an interview with John Finley Williamson, Dr. Fuller discovered that the very kind of preparation he sought was being offered. This training, by then available at the Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey, and frequently referred to as the Westminster Plan of Church Music, Dr. Fuller investigated carefully. The term Westminster Plan perhaps needs some clarification. When used in connection with the work of in the local church, this term simply meant a fully church-wide plan of church music education, activity, and service that aimed to involve an entire congregation in the expressions of their religious emotions, beliefs, and commitments as these might be made through music. The plan was intended to become one arm of the total educational program of a church, along with a Sunday school, youth training, missionary education, scouting, recreation, drama, and any other branch of educational endeavor which the church might provide. It was to teach worship, worship planning and participation, and the materials of worship as well as music. The program involved itself in worship, evangelism, education, and ministries. If this were to become possible, the churches would need to make provision for this training. In Baptist practice, other departments of our church educational program, though they touched upon this need on occasion, had not time, nor was it their purpose, to concentrate on such training. An adequate music program designed for the needs of all age groups could help provide it. This is what Dr. Fuller sought for his church. When later he came to adapt it, his objective was to discover, enlist, train, and use the musically inclined persons of all ages in the congregation, bringing them a closer fellowship with God and each other through worship experiences, through service and understanding, and bringing them to a closer working relationship with their church through the gracious ministry of music. It was to reach people through music rather than to produce music through people. It was to assist the church in its great mission of bringing people closer to Christ. Shortly after learning of the existence of this kind of training, Dr. Fuller had opportunity to observe it in action when he preached a revival series in the church of Dr. Walter Binns, then pastor in Roanoke, Virginia. Dr. Binns had a Westminster graduate developing such a program of music, and Dr. Fuller became all the more convinced that this was what he had been searching for. He had investigated the work of graduates of many other music schools and had talked with people throughout the South, but nowhere else had he found, nor could anyone refer him to, this kind of training and viewpoint from any other source. Following these leads and with his music committee at the First Baptist Church of Atlanta, Dr. Fuller paved the way for this plan to be inaugurated in his church. In June of 1941, he brought to his church Donald and Frances Winters, graduates of Westminster Choir College, to establish there a church-wide program of music of the kind he had long dreamed of having. In the year that followed, under the wise counsel and guidance of Dr. Fuller, the plan was adapted to the Baptist church he served, and in a general way, to Baptist needs anywhere. In 1942, in spite of considerable resistance on the part of both Dr. Fuller and his church in Atlanta, he was conscripted, as he himself expressed it, to become the new president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville. Not long after assuming the duties of the presidency, Dr. Fuller shared with some of the seminary trustees a dream he had cherished for some time of seeing developed at Southern Seminary a great Baptist educational center for the training of all church workers, not pastors alone, but with them missionaries and ministers of many kinds, those serving through education, music, visitation and social service ministries, church administration, church recreation, church secretarial work, in short, training for the entire staff of the local church or mission. He envisioned that this training would be offered in such a way that all could study together, each getting a broader and deeper insight, the tasks and problems of the church program and of each other, all in an academic atmosphere with the highest scholastic standards. Religious education, missions and social work were already available through excellent departments of religious education and missions at the seminary and through the WMU training school. But no full curriculum for the training of full-time church musicians was available at Southern Seminary, nor was there available a training program of exactly the type Dr. Fuller envisioned at any Southern Baptist institution at that time. One of the trustees, Mr. V.V. Cook of Louisville, was challenged by the whole idea of a seminary educational center for all Baptist church workers. Being himself an active layman to whom the music of the church had always been especially meaningful, and having heard enthusiastic reports of the developing program of the music in the Atlanta First Church, Mr. Cook became especially interested in the possibilities of the Seminary School of Music. In 1943, sometime after learning of the availability of a particularly well-suited Lexington Road property near the campus, Mr. Cook came into Dr. Fuller's office one day, quietly laid on his desk a legal envelope and said simply, "Ellis, here's your School of Music." The envelope contained the deed to the property at 2800 Lexington Road, made out to the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. This beautiful early American style building and 7 acres of land overlooking Cherokee Park was directly across from the WMU training school. It was a gift of the Cook family to the seminary, specified to be used for a school church music. Immediately, a number of problems loomed large before the new seminary president, intensified because this happened during the war years. Most Southern Baptist churches in those years wanted a man to lead their music, but many of the young men who might be interested were either already in the Army or on a 1A draft status. There was a shortage of many materials, including paper. Transportation was a real problem. Mails were slow and uncertain. Also, there was at the time no provision by the National Association of Schools of Music, the accrediting agency for music schools, to grant accreditation for a church music major or degree. Thus, the American Association of Theological Schools and the Kentucky Council on Public Higher Education would have to grant approval. Their only usable provision covering such a move in the time available was to expand an existing and already approved department. Then the seminary administration structure had recently been changed. Before 1942, a full professor on the teaching faculty of the seminary served as president along with his regular teaching duties, so that administrative head of the institution was a new idea and a new person. Some members of the seminary family at the time were apprehensive of the new office, in spite of Dr. Sampey's pleas for full acceptance and cooperation. Particularly were they uneasy about any new venture. Furthermore, the seminary faculty was solicitous of their reputation for a very high academic standard, and rightly so. But many could not conceive of music as an academic subject, and feared for their guarded scholastic standards if music were admitted as a degree course. They were also apprehensive lest some new academic discipline, such as music, might assume out of proportion importance. Moreover, the seminary faculty had only one professor of music who had already had a full teaching load combined with speech. The WMU training school also had one music instructor whose music teaching was combined with a very heavy load of field work supervision in social service. Yet, having a beautiful property given to the seminary for the School of Music he very much wanted Baptist to have, Dr. Fuller was faced with the need to answer these and many other problems not only harmoniously and without sacrificing standards, but quickly. The first decision had to be the kind of school that this would be. Dr. Fuller knew, but few others did. He wanted to offer the training for the kind of churchwide program that had been established in his church in Atlanta. Dr. Fuller had no interest or intention whatsoever of transplanting the Westminster Choir College ideas in toto. And likewise, he was determined that the seminary school would not become another conservatory of music with the label sacred in front of it to turn out professional performers. But he was interested in getting the church viewpoint into the very foundation of the new school, similar to that contained in the Westminster Plan, but adapted especially to needs of Baptists, at the same time providing for the highest possible caliber of music training. Dr. Fuller believed that in training musicians along with students preparing for the church's other ministries, all might share together in acquiring that important inner dynamic for the high caliber of Christian service, which would help as many people as could be reached to grow toward Christian maturity. This high caliber of training, he believed, seminary had always provided in some fields, and he felt it should be available for training in all the church's ministries, including music. In the beginning, Dr. Fuller was often misunderstood in all this. There were many who thought it could not be done. There were some who thought of music as an expendable embellishment. There were those who associated the new effort entirely with a misunderstood conception of the Westminster Plan. Some thought it too costly. There were many who still had the viewpoint of the professional individual performer and saw no reason for the study of theological subjects, individual theological subjects or the projected content of many of the proposed new courses. They could not get past the conservatory idea of a school of music. This made the work of establishing the new training program doubly difficult. But Ellis Fuller was not a man to let doubts, difficulties, or setbacks stop what he believed to be God's leading, and he proceeded. Another problem facing the president was that the personnel to bring the vision into reality would necessarily have to share the vision. As he assessed the situation in Louisville, he was not convinced that at the outset anyone other than Mr. Cook really saw the possibilities. Since the Winters had worked with him closely in Atlanta to adapt the basic plan for his church there, Dr. Fuller came to us. Early in January 1943, on a brief stopover in Atlanta, he related all that had happened, showed some photographs of the Lexington Road property, and shared his dream. He asked whether we thought the idea had possibilities for training dedicated Baptists for a Baptist ministry of music. Of course, we did. He then wondered whether we might be interested in becoming a part of the venture. Our first reaction was strongly negative for several reasons. We both felt definitely that we had been called to the ministry of music, which we then interpreted as serving with a local church rather than a teaching ministry. We were young. We had little classroom teaching experience on the college level except in a teaching fellowship capacity. We had been at the Atlanta church only a year and a half, had only a good beginning in the work there, and thought that a growing program in a local church might help his cause more than direct association with it on our part. And finally, the war situation and draft status were uncertainties. Thus, we told him it was unthinkable that we could even consider such a move. Dr. Fuller then asked what Baptists with similar training we could recommend for the position. Almost no names came to mind. For the next several months, in conversations and correspondence with us, with Dr. Williamson and a number of others, as well as consultations with seminary people, many names were offered and their records checked out. Through investigations and interviews with the most promising prospects were followed through. By May 1943, Dr. Fuller felt no nearer to the leader or leaders he felt were God's choice for the work that he had at the outset, except for his continued interest in the Winters. Often during these months, he had approached us again about coming, saying that more and more he believed we had been chosen for the work. Then in early June, I was drafted and to be inducted into the Army in July. We were expecting our first child in September. It was thus apparent that regardless of our loyalties to our first call, we would not be able to continue the work at the Atlanta Church, as the program by that time had grown to the extent that Mrs. Winters could not carry it alone. So Mrs. Winters and I resigned our positions in Atlanta, and she agreed to come to Louisville early in November in time for the official opening of the new Cook Hall. Dr. Fuller had told her that she was to draw up the curriculum, write the bulletin, helping him in his search for suitable faculty and student personnel, and take care of the student correspondence and records preparatory to the teaching that he wanted her to do also. In preparing for the opening, a question was raised concerning an official name for the school. Since the student body was to be entirely separate and the degrees offered were to be different, it seemed wise to refer to the new project as a school of the seminary. Most such schools were designated as departments or schools of sacred music or as choir schools. However, from the first, we were interested in all the music and music services of the church. Sacred music is that to which a sacred text is set. The church-wide plan of music for which the school hoped to offer training involved much more than just singing. Instrumental music, having no words, cannot really be said to be either sacred or secular. Thus, the term sacred music seemed unsuitable for our purposes. A school of church music seemed to be much more appropriate, and that was the name selected. Perhaps the wisdom of this choice was borne out later in the fact that when the National Association of Schools of Music did decide to approve curricula and degrees in this area, they designated it as a program in church music. Because original accreditation approval involved enlarging a department, the word department as well as school was carried in much early publicity, although from the entrance of its first class of degree students, it was officially the School of Church Music. Also, because the original accreditation was through the American Association of Theological Schools, some of whose member schools offered degrees in sacred music, the degrees from the beginning were designated as bachelor's and master's degrees in sacred music. Invitations were sent throughout the convention for the opening of the School of Church Music of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, with the dedication and formal opening of its first building, named Cook Hall, in honor of its donors. The dedication was held on November 5th, 1943. A Pilcher organ, a gift of Mr. and Mrs. C. Edwin Geens, had been installed in one of the front parlors, and was formally dedicated on that same day by an organ recital. With the opening of the second term of the seminary in 1943, in order to use the property immediately to serve student needs, private lessons in piano, voice, and beginning organ were made available to seminary students and student wives and to training school girls on a one-year-only basis. Professor Inman Johnson taught voice to seminary students. Claudia Edwards of the training school taught piano and beginning organ. And Mrs. Winters taught voice to women students and taught the training school classes in sight singing, conducting, and their first course in children's choir methods. The teaching responsibility for Mrs. Winters was not the major part of her work that first year, however. The next priority item was to draw up a curriculum for the new school. Dr. Fuller asked for a 3-year curriculum leading to a Bachelor of Sacred Music degree open to students who had satisfactorily completed 2 years of work at an accredited junior or senior college with a major in music, and a 3-year curriculum leading to a Master of Sacred Music degree open to students who had completed the Bachelor of Music or a Bachelor of Arts degree in music from an accredited college. This was in keeping with the 3-year seminary programs leading to the Bachelor of Divinity and the Master of Theology degrees in the School of Theology at that time. From the time when we had resigned the Atlanta Post in the summer until Mrs. Winters came to Louisville in November, our chief consideration had been the curriculum. On the day after the dedication of Cook Hall, I was assigned to an overseas unit and by the end of November was stationed as chaplain's assistant just out of Honolulu, Hawaii. In Louisville, after the formal opening of the building, the next 6 weeks were spent in intensive efforts on the curriculum along with the teaching. Mrs. Winters sent for catalogs and all the college and seminary catalogs of all the colleges and seminaries in the country which we knew to have any emphasis in the field of church music. While waiting for the slow wartime mails to bring these bulletins and for the APO address through which she could correspond with me, Mrs. Winters, armed with the results of our many discussions of the subject, carefully listed the various aspects of a work of a minister of music for which we considered special training would be needed. Nearly halfway around the world, I was doing the same thing. This list was by no means an arbitrary reproduction of our own training at any one place. It included ideas gleaned from various types of services with which each of us had had experience, including part-time student churches of both of us while single, experiences of each before studying at Princeton and together afterward. These included 2 large downtown city churches, a suburban society church, a summer-only training program in a small mountain town in Virginia, a summer-only resort church on the Atlantic coast, 2 small churches with traditions going back to Revolutionary War days, 2 neighborhood churches, 1 in a small city, 1 in an agricultural center town, a church in the heart of an industrial and ghetto area in a large city, and a college and seminary church in New Jersey. We tried to analyze the special problems in this broad spectrum. We noted areas in which we had wished for help, which had been missing from our own training and had to be learned by experience. We tried to suggest elective areas which we would have liked to study, as well as those which might appeal to students with different needs. Mrs. Winters reviewed Sunday School and Training Union quarterlies of the past few years, as well as Southern Baptist Convention annual reports, to discover what was being done or hoped for in the areas of music and worship. We recalled statements pro and con of members of our choirs and of our music committees of our acquaintance. We investigated ideas and opinions as well as the programs of music directors in many churches and missions from the Atlantic coast to Hawaii. We reviewed with detailed care our work in Atlanta, especially the suggestions of Dr. Fuller. From these studies, there gradually began to unfold a core of content that would be needed to provide for our own students, and these began to fall into place in definite subject areas. We considered carefully the music studies that would be needed to develop sound musicianship. Dr. Fuller had one day strong emphasis on choral work, and this was provided. We realized that special studies would be called for to meet the special needs of the church musicians. We were strongly convinced of a need for biblical and church-related subjects. At the very least, we desired for our students the same intensive introductory studies in English, Old and New Testament, as those taken by students in all other departments. A good foundation in Baptist doctrine, the course in worship, and the basic course in religious education. By the time this much planning had been done, catalogs of other schools were arriving, and every item on the list of subjects being considered was closely checked with every bulletin. From these, we gleaned some additional suggestions of content which could be incorporated with the ideas already taking shape. In addition, the differences and similarities between the curriculum for the BD degree and that for the THM degree of Southern Seminary were carefully studied. The final setup was still somewhat nebulous when in the late December, Dr. Fuller called for the finished copy of the first tentative curriculum for both degrees to be in his hands by the 1st of January. Each session of every part of the study had begun and ended with prayer. Yet when the final draft was called for, in spite of the hours of study, thought, and prayer, Mrs. Winters confesses that she had a sickening feeling of helplessness and inadequacy that led to nearly 3 days of almost constant prayer during the Christmas holidays, shortly before the deadline. During this time, along with everything else, Mrs. Winters had been keeping an infant on his daily four-hour schedule, and she reports that our son had expected that schedule to be quite promptly carried out. However, on the morning of December 26, 1943, after his 6 a.m. feeding, she put him back to bed, and for the first time in his 4 months of life, he did not stir until 12:30. As soon as he was in bed, she went immediately to her desk, and after another period of intensive prayer, began to write. She testifies that for the next 6 hours, in the quiet of the large house, she wrote steadily, without a single interruption, and it was as though everything she wrote were being dictated. She had almost a feeling of detachment as she simply wrote down what came to her without hesitation and without fatigue. When she put down her pen at the end of that period, she had on paper an outline of both required and elective courses for 3 years of study for both a bachelor's and master's degree in church music, different from those of any other school. Complete also were a full catalog type description setting forth the overall content and credit hours for each course and the order in which these courses would be taken. In our minds, there is no way to explain this except that the Lord's hand was in the work. Temporary drafts of mission and graduation requirements were completed, and the next day, and a temporary schedule of classes was drawn up to be sure the music classes would fit in with the seminary schedule without conflict. Style and format followed the seminary catalog, and the whole was in the hands of the president before the deadline. The first reactions to the curricula and requirements were quite favorable. Almost everyone expressed surprise and pleasure that they seemed to be so comprehensive and thorough. The month of January was used to give the seminary and training school faculties an opportunity to go over them carefully. A seminary faculty meeting was held on February 1, 1944. Did consider the matter, but the faculty came to no final conclusion, asking for more time. There was some debate over required elective seminary courses. The music setup they left untouched except for a question concerning hymnology. There was a course having this title already in the seminary curriculum, which appeared to be a duplication. However, Professor Johnson's course was a one-hour course for one term only and included conducting, basic music theory, and other considerations he thought necessary for ministerial students. This course was still thought to be needed for them, but could not be considered adequate preparation for the church musician in the important matter of congregational song. Mrs. Winters had suggested that the name of the seminary course be changed since it included so much more than hymnology. Another hesitancy was the idea of beginning with both degrees. With uncertainties regarding both faculty and student body during wartime beginnings, the wisdom of this question was readily apparent. However, the faculty deliberations continued for 4 more months. By the time of the trustees meeting at the Southern Baptist Convention in May 1944, the seminary faculty had decided against beginning with a master's degree, had approved the bachelor's degree essentially as it was, except that there was still some discussion over minor aspects of the order of seminary elective courses. The executive committee of the board passed this much as it was, and Dr. Fuller took it to the board meeting at the convention. There it was approved by the trustees with only one dissenting vote at first. When later discussion brought Dr. Fuller's report that he had searched all over the country for a year and had others searching with him, but there were almost no Baptists prepared to do the teaching he wanted, the dissenter thought this was a convincing argument of need for the training and asked to change his vote to one of approval. Thus, the trustee vote became unanimous in favor of the curriculum. While the faculties had been deliberating on the curriculum, Mrs. Winters, Emmon Johnson, and Dr. Fuller had been considering how much additional teaching help would be needed for a projected student body of 60, beginning with 20 students the first year and adding 20 each year. Dr. Fuller had asked me to teach as soon as the Army was through with me, and he designated especially the areas of organ, choral conducting, a music school choir, and whatever other courses might need help at that time. He felt that Inman Johnson and Claudia Edwards would carry on the work as they were in at their respective schools. Thus, the major areas to be covered were theory, music history, and piano on the part of a permanent faculty member, plus organ teaching and a daily ensemble rehearsal for music students for at least the first year. A number of names, both men and women, were suggested from the many sources during these months. All were thoroughly investigated, but each declined or was not invited. On May 25th, Professor Johnson presented the name of Dr. Claude Allman, whom he had met at Ridgecrest. Contact was made with him immediately, and he came to Louisville the next week for an interview. We shall say more about him in a moment. In addition to faculty, housing for women students had become a problem. Dr. Fuller had thought originally that the first women students of the music school would be able to room and board at the training school. However, the training school trustees had decided that none but their own students might live there. With so many problems and delays, there was a frequent temptation to postpone the opening of the school for a year. But Dr. Fuller's stand was that the church must go on, war or no war, that we could not win the peace without it, and that the need was really greater than ever before, that while it took a lot of faith and courage, it could and should be done. Thus, May 31, 1944, was a red-letter day, bringing two occurrences with Dr. Fuller considered to be the dew on the wool, indicating that in spite of discouragements, he was supposed to go ahead. One was the coming of Dr. Allman. Claude Marion Allman was a man who seemed to have all the right credentials. He had a Ph.D. degree in theory and composition with a minor in musicology from Eastman School of Music. He was a pianist who had piano teaching experience. He was a composer whose first symphony, even then, was being readied for performance by the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra. He was a Southern Baptist, having joined the church in his early youth. He had 4 years of college teaching experience in the very areas in which the seminary school needed help. He was director of music in a prestigious church in Nashville, very well liked by all who knew him. He would be coming from a Southern institution of good reputation. A regular attendant at Ridgecrest Music Week from its beginnings, he was very strongly interested in Southern Baptist church music, and once presented with the possibilities of some of the Southern Seminary's new music school, he felt a sense of mission connected with it, and which prompted him to be willing to give up a more secure and lucrative position for this one. Indeed, in every way, he seemed to be God's choice for the position, and almost at once, everyone concerned with the school was satisfied. On that same day, Dr. Fuller received word that there was every likelihood he would be able to get for the seminary the property belonging to Mr. George G. Neal and Mrs. Benjamin S. Clarkson, located directly across Alta Vista Road from Cook Hall. It seemed ideal for a girls' dormitory. Both of these advances were confirmed. Dr. Allman's contract was completed on June 6th, and final agreement was made to deed the Neal Clarkson property to the seminary on June 28th. This property later became known as Barnard Hall, so named in honor of the late Mr. and Mrs. I.P. Barnard, parents of the sisters who made the annuity gift. On July 14th, final arrangements were made with Mr. W. Lawrence Cook, professor of organ at the University of School of Music in Louisville, to teach organ 2 half-days a week to advanced organ students at the Seminary School of Music. This completed the music faculty needed for the first year. No head of the school was officially appointed. Because of his faculty status, Emmon Johnson was named acting head of the new school and, of course, continued as head of the music department of the School of Theology. Dr. Fuller thought it would be unfair to ask Professor Johnson to try to carry both, so the president himself retained the administrative leadership of the school. As long as he lived, he was the liaison officer between the two faculties, as the music school faculty was always a completely separate entity from that of the seminary for all the years that we served here. In these beginnings, due to circumstances beyond the control of any of them, Dr. Fuller, Inman Johnson, and Francis Winters were all in a virtually untenable positions, each in a different way, for different reasons, and entirely without the intention of anyone. There were a great many people who did not understand the situation. That it worked out at all is further evidence that the Lord was definitely in the project. Without His guidance, the school could never have been started as it was at the time that it was. Yet history would seem to bear out both the timeliness, the need, the wisdom and of the viewpoint, and the other contributions of the venture to Baptist life and work. It was this church-centered viewpoint, begun in 1943 at Southern Seminary, which has become the foundation and the pattern for a Baptist minister of music, even though of necessity there have been many variations on the theme. During the spring months of 1944, also equipment was being sought. 4 pianos in all were purchased through the generosity of Mr. Norman Perkins, a trustee. Others were loaned to the seminary in exchange for storage. A new molar unit organ was also purchased for practice purposes. Mr. T.R. Allen was unusually helpful in securing other needed equipment of many kinds, a fact that represented a real feat of accomplishment in those war days. A catalog and the forms necessary for the smooth functioning of a school had to be worded, spaced, and printed. Each of these had to be new, carrying a school of music heading rather than that of the seminary proper. 23 forms were needed, in addition to separate matriculation procedures and new dormitory regulations for girls. All of these Mrs. Winters worked out. In preparation and printing of all the forms and working out of the many procedures, Dr. Hugh Peterson, then seminary registrar, was a gracious and indispensable help and continued to be an understanding, encouraging, and helpful friend for the 9 years of our service at the music school. Another equally encouraging and helpful friend of the school was Dr. Leo T. Christman, librarian. Acknowledgments should also be made to Mr. J.O. Anderson, then treasurer, and to Dr. Carrie U. Littlejohn and Miss Claudia Edwards of the WMU Training School for their part in getting the School of Church Music started. Much could be said about the special helpfulness of each. During the 1943-44 school year, the other big problem was a student body. The goal for the first year had been set at 20. By late May, only 7 inquiries had been received. By late June, 3 girls had been accepted by the training school as music majors for their combination degree, and none by the seminary school of music. Some inquiries came in as a result of articles about the school in the May and June issues of the Tie, but the first real results came from Dr. Fuller's visits to Ridgecrest for BSU and Training Union Weeks later in the summer. There he was given an opportunity to present the new program and to interview interested students. It was largely the personal contacts of Dr. Fuller with the help of training school personnel and a few interested seminary students who had musical friends that made it possible to actually open the School of Church Music to its first student body. The school opened for its first session on September 11, 1944, with 2 full-time instructors, Dr. Allman and Mrs. Winters, and 3 part-time instructors, Mr. Cook, Professor Johnson, and Miss Edwards. It had not been possible, after all, to get into the Barnard Hall for that first year, so the upstairs rooms in Cook Hall had been made ready for 9 dormitory girls. Auditions and placement examinations and music were held on the first day, and the music faculty was very much pleased with the musicianship and aptitude of the class as a whole. The goal for the year was met with 20 students matriculating. 4 Louisville applicants, however, were rejected after auditions. They seemed to understand, and this was evidence of attempting to meet a standard from the beginning. And this was pleasing to the seminary faculty. Of the 20 entering students, 17 were music school majors, 7 of them concentrating in organ. 3 of the total number were men, and 3 majors were from the training school. These students came from 9 states and 1 foreign country. One of the problems in beginning this type of venture was that there was really no nucleus. The school started from an idea, a need and a property rather than with people. There seemed to be nothing too tangible from the students' point of view to build from. How to inspire them and get the ideal over to them in such a way as to give them a true vision of what could be done was a big challenge to all concerned. Credit must certainly be given to those first students. They were a stout-hearted group, interested in pioneering and very responsive to ideas new to them, and they formed the needed nucleus even sooner than expected. Plans were made for an opening social and a freshman recital on which all new students performed. Other early events included the daily devotions at the breakfast table for the dormitory girls and some music school picnics in the park. Another first-year event was the beginning of a Christmas Yule log service, which it was hoped would become a tradition. This service was conceived as emblematic of the spirit of the new music school, as like the burning Yule log, it would hopefully radiate a spirit of friendship and service, of social equality and brotherhood, of joy and cheer, of unity and togetherness, of generosity and love, of warmth and light, and of blessing and sacrifice, all of which have been, and we trust are, representative of the spirit of the school. This occasion seemed to furnish the mortar which completed cementing the group into a student body with high ideals, a high morale, and a genuine sense of mission. By the time we were ready to welcome the second class in the fall of 1945, there had begun to grow a spirit which any place outside of the folds of Christ's cause would have been most unusual. Day-by-day accounts of all that was said and done as far as the winter's part in the school's launching was concerned were contained in daily letters exchanged by Donald and Francis Winters. It is only because of this detailed correspondence that had a full account of our part in the beginnings of the school, can they be accurately reconstructed. Through all of this, my role was largely that of consultant. Mrs. Winters would report in detail everything that happened, asking for my suggestions or concurrence. My daily reprise brought back my comments. When I did return after the war and took up my work at the school in November 1945, I felt thoroughly acquainted with the work. Because of the closeness Mrs. Winters and I have always shared in our work, whatever part the Winters may have had in helping Dr. Ellis A. Fuller to launch the Southern Baptist Seminary School of Church Music was a joint effort. We are both grateful to Almighty God for having had this opportunity to serve.
It is obvious that Dr. Winters, or should I say the Winters, were in a unique position to give us this chapter in the founding of the School of Church Music. When I came here as a student, Don Winters took turns with Ken Poole playing the organ, leading the choir, and lifting a student body to new levels of appreciation of the message of God and glory of God to be seen and heard and experienced through music. Dr. Winters, we are grateful to you for this narrative, and it heightens our appreciation for both of you in your unique place in what has been done here. Martin Luther once said, when God begins to do something, it always looks as if it will amount to nothing. Some of us who are busy with the accumulated opportunities of many years will not soon forget one woman separated from her husband by the necessities of war, caring for a small child, living under less than encouraging conditions, producing the kind of beginnings that have proved worthy, and with the help of her husband and many colleagues who later followed, have endured. Following our benediction, there will not be a faculty recessional, and we will be dismissed. However, those of you without 11 o'clock responsibilities are invited to join us in a small processional which will form at the circle in the front of the chapel. We feel there will be probably available cars for members of the faculty, staff, and student body who can journey in one of our finer traditions, I think, to Cave Hill Cemetery, where these Founders Day flowers will be placed by our honored guests on the grave of the founder, who obviously played such a remarkable part in the founding of this school, Dr. Ellis Adams Fuller. May we stand for our benediction. They climbed the steep ascent of heaven. They suffered toil and pain. O God, to us may grace be given to follow in their train. Amen.